Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the Council's next expert is Mr. Ulrich Lesner. He has provided two statements of evidence, one in chief, one in rebuttal. We've also filed a summary of evidence, and I'll ask you to read that to the panel and then answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Stella. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioner. My name is Ulrich Glasner. I'm Chief Engineer for Queenstown Lakes District Council. I have been engaged by Queenstown Lakes District Council to provide evidence in relation to infrastructure matters regarding rezoning requests in the Upper Coosa area of the Queenstown Lakes District. My evidence refers to and relies on Mr. Craig Barth's strategic evidence for the Upper Coosa rezoning hearing, including in particular the part where he explained each of the zones in issue, specifically in terms of the type and densities of the zone that the Council has recommended through its right of replies in the substantive hearings, and they are being pursued. I have used the Council's reply position on all zones when considering whether they raise any issues from an infrastructure and development perspective. As stormwater is addressed at the time of subdivision or actual development and is required to comply with the Council's requirements under the Subdivision Code of Practice, it is not being assessed individually in relation to the rezoning requests. Also, the submissions received from were quite vague in terms of what was being proposed, and only a few provided infrastructure details assessment. This has made the task of assessing the infrastructure effects more difficult. In assessing each of the site-specific submissions, I have considered three key points for water and wastewater. A, the serviceability of the area, whether it is anticipated that the site would connect to the water and wastewater network, and the ease and cost of servicing of the expected level of service including ongoing operations, maintenance costs from additional facilities. B, the location of the area in terms of elevation, whether the area will have adequate water pressure and can drain wastewater under gravity, and if it is adjacent to similarly zoned land to support efficient servicing of the area. And C, if the area will be serviced by the network, whether there are any capacity issues, and if there are, whether there are projects to resolve them within a long-term plan. In the urban area, connection to council services is assumed. In general, water supply is less of an issue for submitter requests for more intensive residential zoning, where residential zoning is currently proposed, because the same FW2 level of firefighting supply is anticipated. Where zoning of a higher fire risk is proposed, that increases the anticipated firefighting requirements, for example, commercial requiring FW3. The water model results are used to assess the ability to adequately service these proposed areas. Rezoning submissions are generally opposed where there is an increased level of service from residential to commercial or visitor accommodation, and the models show there is not capacity to meet this expectation, or they are located outside the geographic extent of the council's model, which I return to below. For the properties at higher elevations, additional water reservoirs or booster pump stations may be required to provide water supply to those houses. Council would prefer efficient infrastructure networks that rationalize facilities and not promote an increase in the number of facilities to supply water at this higher elevation because of ongoing operations and maintenance costs. The effect of the wastewater loads from the submitted rezonings have been assessed using the 2055 wastewater model. Where the model shows that there is currently no capacity within the system, I have considered whether that will be resolved through planned projects in upcoming annual plan reviews and LTP periods, I also identify where LTP projects are required and provided for to enable the rezoning. For example, the upgrade is already planned. It should be noted if council upgrades are required to service the site. The timing of this will be based on the time frame of related LTP project or as negotiated. In some cases, there are capacity issues, but the change is quite minor in terms of additional capacity requirements. It is much more efficient to service new developments where capacity already exists. In my opinion, it is not in the council's best interest for its water and wastewater networks to expand further into currently zoned rural land outside the urban limits. This will result in increased operational maintenance and renewal costs for QLDC over the long term. Mr. Barr has confirmed that proposed residential zoning, including rural residential zoning, had adjoined the urban growth boundary would be expected to connect to council services, water supply and wastewater. Where this zoning can adequately be serviced with existing infrastructure, I do not oppose it from an infrastructure perspective. However, when it is unclear on the level of upgrades required to adequately service a rural residential zone adjoining the urban growth boundary, I oppose the zoning from an infrastructure perspective. This is because I do not support the ad hoc and inefficient expansion of infrastructure, particularly where I understand that there is sufficient available land within the urban growth boundary to serve further residential growth. Rural and rural lifestyle zonings outside the scheme boundary are not anticipated to connect to the council networks, but be privately serviced on-site at the developer's cost. These types of developments will not affect the council's infrastructure nor ongoing maintenance costs, and therefore I generally do not oppose this type of development. My opinions on wastewater and water are based on my knowledge of the network and the council's computer water and wastewater models. The models give a mathematical representation of the infrastructure networks, pipes, pumps, reservoirs, and other assets, and the results produce information about pressure flow and pipe capacities throughout the network. Growth models behind the water and wastewater models are currently being updated to incorporate the proposed district plan. Minor amendments are anticipated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioners, I think with respect to Mr. Glasson's evidence, given that he shifted on a number of cases between evidence in chief and rebuttal, we'll just take it as one, and I'll ask Commissioner Munro to go first and then do it in order for the whole brief.
Okay.
Go for it.
Thanks, Mr. Glasson. So I understand those requests within the infrastructure network area where the council has a sense of capacity, has a sense of what can be serviced, and you have comfort there. And I can understand outside of the area, those rural areas, that will be self-sufficient. And it's those grey areas where there might be a desire to connect and there might be all sorts of unknowns that I'm primarily interested in. What I'm, without asking you to start then going through every submitter to confirm this, what I'm really interested in understanding is where you have doubts about whether or not a proposal could be serviced or what upgrades would be required or what the costs would be. Do you have a sense among the submissions, and it might be something you can provide in writing and through the detail through the council's reply, but do you know which ones are just questions that you don't know, but which through a subdivision application a solution could be substantiated that could be worked out, or which ones, maybe it's they're just really big, maybe it's just that there are really high elevations or remote where you just cannot see a solution being possible without substantial public upgrades first. Is that an unfair refinement to ask you to give us?
No, it's a good refinement, and when you look into my rebuttal,
I
was referring some of them where I envisage at the start from the submission that, for example, I think it was Sticky Forest, 700 lots were maybe to be built. At the moment they went down to 150, and this changed my whole approach to my submission, and I'm not longer opposing this kind of submission. So if a submitter comes back with further information which makes it much clearer what the intent is of the land, this can change definitely the view, but this is a part of my summary here. If we have rural areas adjacent to urban areas where is already infrastructure in place and I get a better understanding what's happening, we are definitely open for this discussion.
The matter that's been traversed yesterday, this issue of if the council zones an area of land for urban or even rural residential type densities, there's an expectation that there be some form of council infrastructure in the short term. Notwithstanding the ability of this panel, this constituted panel, about where the zones might be allocated, but thinking about the different panels as a whole and the submissions as a whole, if there was a means to be clearer in the plan through the policies and methods that said just by having a zone doesn't mean there's infrastructure and it doesn't mean it'll be tomorrow and people might have to wait, would that kind of messaging in the plan go any way to help address your concern that people start banging on the door the next day asking for pipes?
It would definitely help, because at the moment, out of my experience where we are with our infrastructure at the moment, we are just on time or just too late with what we can provide to the developers out there on already zoned sites. And it really depends all on growth and how we can really manage then infrastructure projects in long-term plan or as well in a 30-year plan to highlight it. My understanding in regard of funding these projects is highly related that the projects are in long-term plans, otherwise the council can't collect DCs for these areas, and funding is a problem afterwards.
Another subset of that I want to ask you, and again, we're just having a discussion now, and what could be done about it remains to be seen, if anything, but would another means, if possible, be clarification, particularly at the time of subdivision, that said unless people were willing to just front up and fund infrastructure upgrades themselves, they had to wait in the queue. Would that be in the same sort of information type provision that would help distinguish between just getting a zone in terms of the RMA based on an appropriate land use outcome, and how you might actually fund infrastructure through the LGA, which is a separate process?
Yeah, we are already working with various developers on development agreements, how to fund areas where we have at the moment not envisaged at this point of time growth. They upfront funding infrastructure, and we go through the process in the annual plan and paying them back.
Related to that, some of the submissions made aren't really being opposed by Mr. Barr or his planning colleagues, or any of the ecology or traffic or landscape. I think a big question sometimes is just the infrastructure question. And I wanted to ask whether, first to you, and then to Ms. Scott, in those circumstances where the only question mark might be the timing between infrastructure and servicing, whether another way forward might be the use of some form of deferred zoning or similar, that effectively says infrastructure is the problem, but once that's sorted, everyone else seems happy. Because it seems, as I see it, potentially a rough ride for a submitter to be told no to a zone when everyone else is happy with the outcome. There's just a few years difference between when infrastructure might have been
programmed in, and so they either then have to go through the cost of a private plan change or wait for the next plan review. So have the use of any kind of deferred zones ever been used in this district, or?
Not as I'm aware.
This stop gave me an expression that looked like she was going to play, so. He probably doesn't even need to respond. I think I understand clearly from his body language what the council's view on that is.
I think it's probably a question for Mr. Barr about deferred zoning.
I think Mr. Scott needs a bigger laptop to hide behind.
Well, let me then find.
I'm not a planner.
No, that's fine. But it's not serious a planning issue, though. It's also a matter of council policy.
Yes, yeah.
But I'm very interested in understanding the range of methods that might be available to help bridge infrastructure timing uncertainties. Because that's not the same for me as the potential for a critical permanent effect on an ONL, of which there's no going back from. It's almost once the ducks are lined up, it's okay, but until then it's problematic, which I see slightly differently in terms of potential effects. It's more of a temporary effect necessarily than a permanent one. So maybe after we've finished with you, Mr. Glasner, given that Mr. Barr won't be on next, there can be some discussion over the next lunch break you guys share with each other about that, because I'm very interested to see what options there are. And I haven't really seen much Section 32 analysis about how we could explore different things about funding. I mean, I haven't even seen a policy in the plan that says encourage developers to fund infrastructure themselves if they want to get ahead of the list, which I'd have thought would be a pretty elementary prompt to send them in light of some of the issues you've raised, for instance. I'll stop there, because I'm actually asking questions now. I'm starting to talk.
Yes, we have. Any more?
Mr. Glasner, actually, it seems that even though we haven't really conferred on this, our thinking is along similar lines. And so, given what you've already heard from Commissioner Munro, what I wanted to understand in various terms, I'm sure you've already dealt with this in previous hearings, is how has the council dealt with the very rapid growth that's occurred to date in providing infrastructure? I mean, in your evidence, you talked a lot about funding under the long-term plan. So that, to me, suggests that there might have been a few issues already come up with the long-term plan not keeping pace with what you actually have to deal with. And that would help me understand Commissioner Munro's issue going forward if the rapid rate of growth continues and is not foreseen under your plan, then how are you going to deal with it?
Looking a little bit ahead, what we are doing at the moment, this is as well part of this evidence, we are looking for the latest growth predictions throughout the district. We are updating all of our models related to wastewater and water supply. We've just started to review all of our stormwater management plans to get better guidance as well in regard to stormwater issues. We have other problems in the district as well. I don't know if you're aware of lakes now here in how we are in regard to water supply. We have to deal with, from a master planning perspective, how can we address this one? This is a totally different ratepayer issue, which is not falling on a developer, because the existing ratepayer base has to pay for these kind of works. Coming back to your question, yes, we experienced a lot of problems in this regard. We were dealing mainly then with the developers with development agreements. We have, for example, then asked developers, instead of putting a 500 cube reservoir in, putting a 1,000 cube reservoir in, because we are aware of, we are zoning an area to high density in Queenstown, to get already a little bit ahead, and we are paying them back, though they have done the work, we have it in the annual plan, and they get the money back next financial year, to really address already foreseeable issues in the future, or pipe-wise upgrades, and dealing with the developer saying, okay, you are putting a pipe in at the moment, put it a size bigger, that caters as well for higher densities we have throughout in the district, and this is what's occurring at the moment.
Mm. And that's what you will continue to do in the future?
I think we have, this is what I'm saying, we are just on time or just too late. For a lot of the developers, we are just too late because they want to be on the market right now, and we have to go through processes and takes as well a little bit of time.
Okay, thank you.
I have the great pleasure of working with Ulrich on a daily basis, so do you want to talk about chlorination by any chance? But the, because this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's the, I'm not even sure if the district plans, or the proposed district plan is the right avenue because, for infrastructure, because it would seem that infrastructure, if you deal with short term, medium term, and long term, infrastructure is almost looking at a 30-year horizon.
Yep, that's correct. This is what, yeah, that's the moment on our strategy. Yeah.
And if you looked at the rapid growth that's been alluded to, it's a bit like volcanology in that you don't know if it's going to erupt. You don't know. Oh, look, it's erupting. And I would suggest we haven't seen anything yet. So one of the questions I was going to ask before from an ecology perspective or a landscape perspective, but if you were to look at that map and say, in terms of just in time, this is where we should be heading, where would it be? I know that's a bit, just from an infrastructure perspective, because if you looked at the outer growth boundaries being the two rivers,
yep.
And if you look at the coloured patches that are on there at the moment, and if you thought about us giving five times the size, there's not a lot of space left.
Not, that's correct, but there's still enough space to cater for growth out of what I have seen on the numbers, yes. The minimum for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
So this is why I think to extend it further out, and we are going then anyway to another district plan,
yeah, exactly.
Which will have another chance to really then allocate other areas for future growth. So
it was sort of the question when I was with Ms. Nelson before, and I said I've got a sort of vague question, but it's not for this district plan, it's for the next one potentially, and that's sort of where, like, in terms of an infrastructure, that's almost, in terms of Wanaka,
yep.
Like Queenstown being a different kettle of fish, but Wanaka's, we're almost there okay for this PDP and this district plan period.
Yep.
But after that, you really have to start fishing around a bit, probably further up the Cadrona Valley or, dare I say, out towards Hawea.
For example, in regard of the water supply site here in Wanaka, from a master plan perspective, we would like, because of the algae issue, decommissioning, for example, Western and upgrade Beacon Point reservoir for a 30-year horizon. So this plant will be then cater in general for 30 years, but the pipework infrastructure will follow suit in regards of where development occurs. So we would not put in the pipe network for 30 years. We would follow then suit where development occurs, but the plant itself will be definitely built for this horizon as a minimum.
Follow-up question: where is your Beacon Point? This
part? Yes. To Mr. Beresford.
Well, is that the one right on the eastern edge of?
This is Western. The Western intake is sitting here. The reservoir is sitting here on the little knob of the hill, and this is the Beacon Point intake and Beacon Point reservoir sitting. Directly beside Allenby Farms and feeding them into Northland and the rest of Wanaka.
While you're standing there,
yes,
I haven't stood next to the map, but if you just take us through, what do those maps tell us? From an infrastructure point of view,
yes.
What messages should we derive from those maps?
Only these maps are the same. Here's only the aerial behind it. So this is was not a well printed out. So this shows mainly all the growth areas and from an infrastructure, the boundaries we have set in regards of where we provide wastewater and water supply to various areas here in Wanaka.
Are they the same as the urban growth boundaries as defined in the plan?
No, they are different.
And could you just trace them around so I'll know when I stand next to what I'm looking for.
We are going around here with the water supply and wastewater, jumping in here. There was a restricted area, so this has changed to the North Lake side. We will provide water now into this area. We are following here, going around the dotted line and coming around here and closing it up here. That's the service area.
Which is almost, was reasonably close to the open
ground. Reasonably close, yes.
Yeah. One of the issues we've had in terms of pressure, which we're getting.
You've seen the emails from yesterday. Yeah.
But the, you're confident that the upgrades to the and to supply, if there was any like the rural lifestyle up in Studham Road, that's quite a high elevation.
Yeah, so as you just pointed out, we have some issues in regards of pressure at the moment, what the people experience, that's why I asked to do some more logging. The model shows us, yes, there is something which sits around 20 meter high. This is around about the lowest level of service we are providing. With decommissioning Western Intake and upgrading Eaton Point, we have two options to service this area with a further ring main goes around here because the elevation would then provide enough pressure into this area. But more, two more options, another reservoir at Horsenden.
Horsenden, yeah.
And a third option would be a booster pump station at the power at the bottom here, feeding then into this zone. And this is currently under investigation and scoping.
While you're talking about Horsenden, you've said that your paragraph 6.19 of the letter parts of the proposed land subject to rezoning include land above a contour of 346,
mm-hmm.
which couldn't be serviced by the Horsenden Reservoir. And I suppose my question is, well, what parts, because I haven't seen the contour map with 346 on it, can you get, describe it to me verbally, and better still, for Ms. Scott, give us a plan.
Yeah, well, we can provide you with a map, that shouldn't be any problems. In regards of our level of service, normally we are providing around about 30 meters head, so you have a pressure at your house of 30 meters head at your boundary, not at your house line. So this is what people sometimes confuse that as well. So we are providing our service ends at the boundary, and if they are building a house which is sitting 15 meters higher and we have already 30 meters head, they have only 15 meters of pressure at the house line. So this is what they need to understand as well. From a zoning perspective, we try normally to cover then the top level with the 30 meter head pressure. And in some areas where it shows at the moment the zoning is sitting above these levels, we could service. And this is what we are saying. We would struggle with this one based on the chosen site for this reservoir at the moment.
Okay, so can we put a map that I would appreciate a plan overlaid on the development plan so we understand how much of the development site we're talking about? This may be an issue for Ms. Banks rather than yourself, and you can tell me. I sat on the natural hazards section of this plan, and we heard a representation from the submitter who said to us that in the natural hazards setting there needed to be more emphasis on fire as a natural hazard. And he had recommendations as to what should go in the natural hazard section. but he also drew our attention to the fact that there are areas, developed areas of the district, that fire engines cannot reach, and that Hidden Hills is one of those areas, and there's one over at Queenstown, at the clinic at Mope Lake, and he submitted to it, he suggested to us this was an issue that we and the plan needed to be concerned about. In terms of, you've talked about infrastructure in terms of water for firefighting. Have you considered the delivery mechanism for firefighting water, like can in the Allenby context, will fire engines be able to get to those properties?
Really good question. I think it's a must. That's my personal view. You need to get access to the site. If you have remote sites without access to council's water supply, normally they have to prepare their own firefighting volumes out there, though they normally have two reservoirs sitting on their site. One is for their portable use and the other one is for firefighting purposes. I don't know if this goes as well, I think, in building regulations, if these sites need maybe sprinkler systems boosted up to their own supply. Other supplies could be serviced if we're not getting the full levels of service in regards of pressure that we feed in an additional reservoir on site, which then could be used. But from a traffic perspective, I believe if we are zoning something, we need to get as well access for fire service to reach the site.
And it's an issue for Ms. Banks whether, for instance, at Allenby you would have that, or can you answer that question?
I don't know. No, can't answer.
And in your rebuttal evidence, that at 5:15, you conclude your discussion of Mr. Edgar's evidence with somewhat enigmatic statement.
Is that
you
four?
Have,
is that four?
Four. Four. Oh, 4:15.
Yeah.
Somebody. Enigmatic statement that you have nothing to add, which left me wondering whether you oppose that request from a infrastructure point of view or not. Can you clarify?
I have to read that. I don't recall it in detail. If you could just have a look at it. When I make such a comment, normally I support what's written. Otherwise, I would make clear statements, would be against it. Yeah, I agree, because there are, he's saying, I consider, however, the proposed rezoning of the areas A and Z and the rural lifestyle would not necessarily require council recirculated wastewater and water supply. So this is why I said, okay, fine with it. Thank you.
Any more for anybody?
I've got one question. Mr. Gladwell, I just can't find the submission that in which you discussed it, but it relates to Studham Road and the fact that the two ends are not joined. And you seem to be suggesting that that was a reason for the council to not support any rezoning. So if I am not correct in how I paraphrased that, stop me now. Is that correct? That because the road connection was not anticipated by council, there was a reason to not support the rezoning?
No, because I'm not responding to rolling issues, so the infrastructure is...
Well, I may have confused it with Mr. Barr's evidence, but
I can't recall this one. Normally I wouldn't really react if there's a road on, not a road link in place. We have other areas where we have it at Slopehill Road, for example, in Queenstown, is one end, another end, and we still provide service in regards of Three Waters infrastructure. So I wouldn't oppose it out of this reason.
Well, is roading part of your area of expertise in a general sense?
Yes, in a general sense, correct, yeah.
So could I just ask you then, if it is simply a matter of funding a road connection?
Two questions back on this one. If there is a paper road already in place, so we have a road which is formed and then a paper road in between, which is used as farming or whatsoever, easy exercise, so could be built nearly straight away if funding is available. If there is not a paper road and no designation in place, it's quite a process to go through. It's doable. We have done it just in Queenstown with the Eastern Access Road or Hawthorne Drive, but it's quite a process.
Assuming that a road formed part of the subdivision,
yep,
then that might be a way of achieving
absolutely
a connection,
yes,
and that would be at the developer's cost.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, I just wanted to be clear about that.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Grassner. Just while we've been going through your rebuttal, one question for completeness. Where submitters have come back and provided information showing how various options could work, non-public connection options, so private solutions.
Right, can you bet.
And on the basis of that, you've indicated agreements that you could support the rezoning. Is that assuming that our rezoning would require them to implement the solutions I've told you they could implement? Because if we weren't able to tie to any rezoning, the basis of that being requirements to do what they said they'd do, they could still come back to the council and say, now we want our public services, we just gave you a high-level report and it turns out it was wrong. So where you've indicated agreement on the basis of that information, are you actually assuming that they would,
yep,
be held to those?
Absolutely.
And so if we felt that with the tools we had to make decisions on zoning that we couldn't bring with those zones, those requirements, you'd revert to your position for support.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad I checked that with you. Thanks. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Smith. Really appreciate
you.
Your assistance.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Robert.
The council's next witness is Ms. Banks. Two statements of evidence, one in chief, one in rebuttal. She has prepared a summary of her evidence, which I believe you have in front of you, which I will ask you to read. Thank you, Anthony. I've been engaged by Queensland Lakes District Council, KLCC, to provide evidence in relation to the council regarding the zoning request in the Upper Tusa area of the Queensland Lakes District. I have estimated the impact of potential traffic that could be generated for the maximum development enabled in a rezoning. I assess whether the existing road infrastructure could accommodate the additional traffic from the rezoning and also identify any safety concerns related to the increase in the traffic.
Generally, the submissions I opposed are because of the scale of development, and I was not confident without further evidence that the existing road network could accommodate the vehicle movement generated. In some cases, there was insufficient information or uncertainty in the submission to enable my support for these submissions. In this summary, I focus on the main submissions where expert transport evidence has been filed on behalf of submitters. These are as follows. Arena Society Limited proposed to rezone land at the eastern edge of the One Kasem Centre from notified medium density residential MDR with a One Kasem Centre transition overlay TCTO to One Kasem Centre, WTC. The request applies to sites fronting on both sides of Russell Street and the southern side of Bryanston Street between Charles Street and the Garden Street. The rezoning plot would enable more commercial activities, and I have concerns with the possible increase in traffic flows in the town centre, parking demands and pedestrian safety. There are currently limited parking options around the town centre as they are at capacity for both on and off street car parks. In my view, the MDR provisions will restrict the level of commercial activities enabled and retain on-site parking provisions that are in high demand in the town centre. Farina Propriety Limited has also requested for the block bound by McDougall, Brownstone and Upton Street by the Wanaka Camping Grounds be rezoned from low density residential to MDR with a visitor accommodation overlay. I have assessed the transport impact, and in my view, the rezoning to MDR is acceptable as the additional traffic movement will be minimal. However, I have concerns that the physical accommodation overlay will enable more permitted activities within the site that have not been assessed in Mr. Carr's evidence. In my view, parking, traffic and safety in the area could be affected with the physical accommodation overlay plot. There will be an increase in turning movement into and out of the site with the overlay plot, and I am concerned with safety implications on the intersection of McDougal Street, Brownstone and Upton Street, as the site is bounded by the corners of these intersections. I have no issues with the MDR rezone, but I think that a visitor accommodation overlay will create adverse transport effects in the area. Michael Beresford, submission number 149, has sought for a rezone from rural general to LDR for the plantation in the general vicinity of an area locally, known locally as City Forest, adjacent to the Northlake development. There is no existing road infrastructure linking to Sticky Forest and the site is landlocked. An assessment has been undertaken by Mr. Mithril in his evidence. However, there is still uncertainty with potential access points. In my opinion, consideration of or satisfaction of appropriate access should not be deferred to consenting stages, as there needs to be a sufficient level of information that there is a viable option that will not compromise the safety, location and appropriateness of the new roads, and possibly the existing roads to which they will need to join. There are two submissions, Orchard Road Holdings Limited and Jackie and Red Eye and others, that request rezoning to allow for residential activities fronting onto the north side of Orchard Road. Orchard Road Holdings Limited seek LDR and could enable 633 allotments. In my view, the traffic generated from the scale of this development would be detrimental and will have associated safety issues from the trips generated on the surrounding road network. Jackie and Redai and others also seek rural residential for the block of land on the Riverbank Orchard Road intersection that extends the entire length of Riverbank Road. Although the request is for lower density scaling than Orchard Road Commission and could enable 69 allotments, I note that the subject area has 9 landowners. Therefore, subdivision for each lot will be triggered at different stages. This could potentially create an excess of access points that the council would not be able to assess as a group, but individually as the different owners sought to subdivide their land. This could lead to an inefficient outcome. I do not consider that traffic generation is an issue if this land will be zoned to rural residential because the traffic generated will not be significant. However, I am concerned about the safety and location of the accesses along Orchard Road and Riverbank Road. The Glenview Station Zone is a new zone sought for the area west of Glenview Bay by Glenview Bay Trustees Limited. I have opposed the zoning because there is uncertainty surrounding the scale of additional proposed development above that which is currently consented. A traffic assessment has been undertaken by Mr. Carr. However, it is not based on what the zoning could enable and therefore does not assess the maximum potential of development. Jeremy Bell Investments Limited seek to rezone 14.54 hectares of land to the site of Wanaka Airport from rural to Wanaka Airport mixed use zone. The subject site is located on the south side of the State Highway 6. In my opinion, the level of development enabled, if the rezoning were accepted, is a safety concern because of the staggered intersection configuration of the site to the airport. Right turn movement into and out of the development to the State Highway will be significantly increased from development, and this has not been addressed. The long queues developed for these movements also need to be addressed, as those lead to driver frustration and drivers taking shorter gaps in the traffic. Thank you.
Finally, someone I can understand. Well done.
You're obviously elected to ask the first question. Commissioner McLeod.
No, you crack on. That was just a comment.
Short story, thanks, thanks. I'll start with some questions similar to some I asked the previous witness. In a number of the submissions you've assessed, you have made comments to the extent of the road would need to be widened, the footpath would need to be added,
yes.
So on and so forth. If in our determination of the submissions we didn't think we had the ability to require those outcomes. That's not to say they wouldn't happen, but they would have to be left into another consenting process to potentially not happen. Would you withdraw your support for those rezonings?
I guess it's case by case. Which
would you be able to give us a better understanding which ones are die in the ditch, there must be upgrades definitively certain before you could support rezoning, and which ones there needs to be a solution, but it can probably be detailed up later.
I think the issue is with all the statements I've made, there's just a lack of information, lack of proportion information, modelling information.
You're aware though that for a plan change, it's not uncommon for people to say it's an enabling framework and they'll figure out detail later. That's why we have resource consents later on, as opposed to just doing resource consents now. So I mean, I guess what I'm asking you is there's always uncertainty at the plan making stage. It's understanding, does the plan have tools to allow uncertainty to be satisfactorily addressed, or due to things like scale, as you identify, it's just too uncertain. And I wasn't clear from your review which ones would fall into which category.
Yeah, I guess I would have to, if you want a more clear definition for each one, I guess I would look through them.
If you could, it would help me, because I think a decision made on the basis of we don't definitively know where every road access might be, for instance, could be found by a judge to be a wholly unreasonable burden for a rezoning based on future subdivisions. So if that's something, without giving you too much homework, you could just give us even just a list rather than expansive, more written analysis, I think would help me hugely.
So more like a yes or no.
Which ones do you think there, we know which ones you've got uncertainties of because you said so.
Yes.
Of those, which ones you think through future subdivision consents you'd be confident an acceptable solution could be worked out?
Yep.
And which ones, even taking into account subdivision consent, you've just got no confidence in?
Okay, yep.
Would be really helpful.
I was thinking of a table submitter, yes or no.
Right.
So based on what I have.
Yeah. Related to that, I found some of your all of your research, of course, very helpful. But one of the things you did that few of the other witnesses did was to start grouping relevant submissions together and looking at them cumulatively and collectively. And one of the ones you looked at was, where is it? I've got too many things on. I need multiple computer screens. Was one that related to
Sutton Road and West Meadows?
Well, yes, West Meadows Drive and Cardrongo Road. And you made a comment that when you considered the extent of rezoning proposed on one side of the road and the notified local shopping centre zone opposite,
you thought there'd be concerns. But of course the council is now proposing to shrink that local shopping centre zone by nearly two-thirds. So I wanted to ask whether in light of the council's now position to shrink that centre down from 2.7 hectares to 1 hectare, you would have the same concerns still.
I think my concerns were zoning possession.
I don't recall you were that specific. I think you just said there were safety issues and traffic capacity issues. Maybe that's just something you can think about. Things can come back to the reply. But I noticed you said the notified zoning, which wasn't the same thing that council's now pursuing me.
Right.
So that's just a question, right? Have you had a chance to look through? Well, again, it's not. No, I won't go there.
Thank you.
You don't know what I was going to ask. The overlay, the Wanaka overlay suggestion, and you talked about it extensively in your summary just now.
Yeah.
In each of the scenarios, medium density housing or the town centre, commercial activity was permitted and residential was permitted. The town centre zone would have more generous bulk and location entitlements. Is it that additional floor space you had in mind when you talked about the additional activity and traffic generation that could result?
Yeah, I guess I see that with the one town centre, it would enable more commercial activities and the more attraction for people to come in.
Do you think that just while we tease out all the pros and cons of that submission, as Wanaka grows and the resident population grows around it, is there an argument that there will be much more traffic through and into Wanaka town centre anyway, not so much because of new attractors attracting people, but just because there are more people going to what's already there anyway? And in your own mind, are you confident that you can delineate the additional busyness and all the effects that brings that's going to happen anyway as the population grows, and then a distinctly different generation that the town centre overlay rezoning request would create on top of that? So I guess I'm asking, have you considered that Wanaka's going to get a heck of a lot busier anyway?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. And I guess it's whether... Because at the moment, Bryson Street is also considered as going to be a tier of road. And there is it's contradicting whether you want to go to the town centre.
Well, that's a similar issue. I've got my questions on that. I understand that part, but thank you.
Yeah. I just found out traffic is going to grow. It's going to get more intense. And I think the issue I've raised is there isn't that existing transport infrastructure to support this. Well, not just this, but in general. For example, the additional parking provisions, which haven't been identified, which I think it's relying on with the one it's essential for.
Specific to that overlay rezoning and on this arterial road function.
Yes.
My understanding of the desirability in the council's view of the arterial road was to take traffic off Ardmore so that became a much more pedestrian focused, people can get to the lake. And so if we supported the submitted rezoning, and as a consequence of that, the arterial function, not necessarily in total traffic capacity, but travel speed, slowing down, stopping for parking, pedestrians, that sort of thing. Do you think that could undermine the efforts to get traffic off Ardmore Street, because more cars might then try and go back to using Ardmore Street?
No, I think generally, if you're a driver, you still, I guess you think of the less distance, don't you?
But you don't think for locals, if it's not a much faster route and they think it's full of people parking and stopping and pedestrian crossings between the two sides?
Armour Street is very
urban, very pedestrian, you know, a lot of...
Is it?
Well...
Well, it was pretty wide and full of service lanes at the moment, but, yeah. But okay, look, that's, I understand, yeah. That was a fear I had, but you don't have that concern, that's fine. Thinking a bit more wider then, so some of the Glasner's concerns about some of these rezonings involve expectation of council bringing forward infrastructure projects and bringing forward what have you. Do you have the same concern in terms of transport upgrades that the council might be asked to provide, new traffic lights, new roundabouts, or do you have more confidence that the culture of getting developers to pay for those sort of things would not make that kind of problem?
I think that's something more for a council to respond to. In terms of
you've raised comments in your evaluation submission saying certain upgrades would be required, ?
Yes.
So what I'm asking you is it a case with transport upgrades of developers satisfying how they do it, then funding it themselves, or...
Yes, that's how I understand
it. Okay, thanks. So not quite the same as Mr. Glasner's separate, who funds it today.
Okay.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, well, I think I understand you. Look, that's all for me, thank you.
Commissioner Munro sort of asked some of my questions. I think I now understand what you're saying, and we get that in relation to some of the specific effects, it would depend on the circumstances, and you're going to provide some information in relation to individual properties. So I still would like some clarification, please, where you do talk about intersection upgrades and the like, whether the assessment of development at the time development is proposed does have the mechanisms for requiring those upgrades through the development contribution. Do you know that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what I've been assessing them and then at a high level, and then because of the trips or the traffic that's going to be generated by the development, that I project that an upgrade will be required as a result of the development.
Yeah, so it comes back to Commissioner Rowe's point.
Yes.
If this is a zoning issue, then should the specific effects be looked at now, or is it something that gets considered at the time that a specific development is put forward?
I guess it also depends on the scale of development, but I think, some of them, I have said that could be looked at in the subdivision stage, and then we can find further details. If we go back to me going through each one and assessing them as a person.
Okay, now in relation to with your statement that I confused with Mr. Glasner's about Studham Road, where you talked about Studham Road not being fully formed.
Mm.
So just following up on that one, if it can be assumed that Studham Road will be connected as part of the process of future development, either through subdivision, application or whatever, would that change your opinion about the appropriateness of rezoning?
Yes, yes. Because at the moment I'm assessing the basement on its current form, and then I think I've identified, but I just don't know when and if the home will be formed, not the full extent.
Yes, yeah, okay. That's really all I had, thank you.
Commissioner McFadden. Yeah, I think with Studham Road, it probably is a question of when, as opposed to an if, sort of, hence the Studham. I'm interested in the airport, you're talking about multiple accesses off, this is the Jeremy Bell Investments on as you're going out of town on the right-hand side. If there was one access road which came off of Mount Barker Road, for example, would that change your view of that?
I think it wasn't the multiple access. I think it was just the right turn movement out of Mount Barker Road that I was concerned about.
Gotcha. So that would actually make it worse?
Yeah. Yes.
You're concentrating all the traffic onto it.
Yes, because there's a lot of with the I think this is Crowe's evidence, there's a lot of movement coming out. Because of the potential development.
Yeah.
And some concerns of, as you know, the right time movement that was just hit highway can be difficult.
Yep.
So I think that hasn't been addressed in this.
Yeah, I agree with the previous speakers, and that table will be very helpful because it's a lot of crystal ball gazing.
Yes.
From my council's perspective, as in being a councillor, not in terms of being council, congestion is your friend in many respects because that's when you get modal change.
Yes.
So the way that work is growing and developing and is getting more congested, hopefully we'll end up with some sort of modal change, so you end up going to bikes. How do you view the layout now? I'd be interested in your opinion now of, for example, Branston's an arterial, and that arterial then moves out to Riverbank, if you want to pick it. The capacity within those roads, the existing roads, for different modes of transport, not just simply vehicle movements. Is it there? Is it?
Yeah, and I think, yeah, on looking at places, that there are there's some footpath decisions, and is this, I guess, with the public transport, which one that is lacking? There are provisions for alternative transport, and you could. Matter of how we encourage this instead of having such a heavy reliance on private vehicle use.
And which leads on to a question about parking road facility. Have you had any thought as to a suitable location?
No, I haven't.
Yep.
So we're coming into Wanaka in centre.
So if you're arriving in Wanaka and there was just casting a mind forward. And if you haven't, could you please?
Yeah.
Thank you. And you?
Thank you. Question is thanks. Going back to what that Commissioner Monroe was asking you about, assessing cumulative demand in particular between Start of the Road and West Meadows. I foresee that the response we will get from the individual submissions is, well, if the combined effect of the submission, we don't worry about his, just worry about mine. Turn him down and grant mine. And so the question is, in terms of those capacity issues you've identified on West Meadows Road, how much cumulative additional capacity is there on that road, if any?
What, as a result of the...
Well, if we were to start picking and choosing submissions...
I guess my view is that we have to look at the bigger picture to... You know, otherwise, we won't. There's a risk, isn't it? I think if we look at them individually, they probably will, on its own right, they'll be fine. But I think we just have to. Are you saying how we choose which?
Well, that's a planning problem for us to discuss with Mr. Starr. The question we need to answer, or the answer we need from you, is you said if they all got what they're seeking.
Yeah.
That would be too much.
Mm-hmm.
But how much capacity is there if they all got some of what they were seeking?
Okay. Well, I can't give a definitive answer, but I guess it is reduced, obviously.
It must be better. but at what point does it cross the line from being unacceptable from a traffic point of view in your mind to being acceptable?
I'll have to look into more detail for, I guess, all those submissions for that area. You would like to know how much that we can actually take on, or?
Indeed, because just looking at the map, there are some obvious low-hanging fruit from a zoning point of view, where the zone goes through the middle of properties, and it would be logical to extend, to take the zone to the cadastral boundary, even though that doesn't produce a nice straight line in terms of the zone. But the question is, how much more can that road stand? And unless we have a sense of that, we can't begin to consider going forward on that. So, yes, if you could think about that, please.
Can I ask a follow-up to that? Just because the actual capacity of public roads tends to be thousands of cars more than tend to use it in places like Wanaka, it might be helpful if you could provide your response with some indication of orders of magnitude of upgrade. That is to say, limited development might be tolerable as things are now, but with a slight bit of widening and a turning bay, that might change. There might be some roads that the council controls that a speed limit reduction might in time not be adverse, it might be entirely appropriate to do. And so understanding the corresponding actions that might need to be undertaken would help us. There's the person who comes from an area that has traffic lights on every intersection and struggle to say the world to stop turning. But that's not this place.
You're right, it's not this place.
No. In fact, I wonder, I think one of the commissioners might have actually been late if there was congestion in this town.
Surely not. Going on, so that's a little job for you. And I don't think we're looking for a precise answer, because as Commissioner Monroe said, this is a rezoning application. Mm-hmm. We just want to know what is beyond the pale, and at what point does it move into the zone of being acceptable. Yeah. We don't want to, we're not looking for an elaborate analysis, but it's, at the moment, it's a red light on a cumulative basis, and we want to know when does it start to get in the margin, and when would you be comfortable in that range? We're talking about a range of answers rather than saying at 402 additional units it would be a problem, and at 401 it will be fine. That's not where we are at.
Mr. Chairman, I just wonder whether on that it might be of help to us all to have some guidance from you on whether a minimum separation of property access is critical, just in terms of the overall function of the road. So it may not just be the additional numbers, but whether it's a spatial thing.
Now, if I could ask you please to turn to your paragraph 6.21, where you've said that minimum density development should be connected to public transport, and I understood from your previous answer that there is little or no public transport in Wanaka. And therefore, that would suggest there should be no minimum density development on that analysis. So this sort of seems an absolute snooker.
Yes, that is true. I guess it's worth connecting to transit on with the alternative of cycling and walking, and then with
the schools that have the school buses, but they're not connection. So would you like to qualify that, I suppose I should ask you.
Yeah.
So you're really talking about school buses?
Yeah.
Close enough to schools that they're walking.
Now, a number of cases where you've drawn attention, and I think this is part of your methodology, as you said, you've taken the road as it is. So I'm looking, for instance, at the bottom of page 13. You draw more pedestrians and there's no pedestrian crossing options. And it seemed to me, and again, here in Hawea, you said, well, access onto Cemetery Road is an issue with the 100k limit. And the thought occurred to me that these are council roads and the solution's in the council's hands, isn't it? Could put a pedestrian crossing in, could reduce the speed limit. You may already, I can't recall exactly what you said to Commissioner Monroe, could we assume that in cases where it is clearly, where a solution is clearly within the council's hands, that this is not an insuperable obstacle? As part of the discussion or the evidence on the Condrota Valley Road local shopping centre, Mr. White's given evidence of a proposal for an arterial road from there through to three parks that's currently the subject of resource consent application. Are you aware of that? At 9.11, we're discussing here the transition overlay as opposed to the town centre zoning which is sought. Mr. Carr's evidence suggests that a reduction in people coming in and out of those houses, out of those properties, would be beneficial from a transport point of view, and I want to get your response to that.
Yes, I do agree with that, but I also don't, because I guess the speed environment is slow as it is through there, and I don't see that would be an issue with how it is currently, with all these accesses that are through there.
I suppose if it's this comes back to Commissioner Monroe's point, if it becomes a greater use as an arterial road, will it become an issue?
Yes, it could be, yes.
I want to ask you about an apparent inconsistency in your between your rebuttal evidence and your evidence in chief. In your rebuttal, you say that the parking policy regarding medium density development in central city or in the central township is likely to be insufficient as it is. That's over a complex of I think of the Verena evidence. And in your evidence in chief, you
oppose the removal of, this is at 9.17, you oppose the removal of notified NDR zoning for transport because it discourages urban sprawl, encourages alternative transport modes. And between the two of them, they don't seem to tie up to me. I can understand that there are collateral benefits from a planning point of view and more compact development, but if there's not enough parking for medium density as it is, isn't reduction in medium density necessarily a good thing from a transport point of view?
So you're referring to the time, so removing the medium density?
Yes, the submissions, the submitters seek removal of the medium density area in the central township, behind the central township, and your response is you oppose it on a traffic point of view. Elsewhere, however, in your rebuttal, you say there's not enough parking for medium density as it is, which suggested to me, well, if there's not enough parking, that surely makes a case for reducing the amount of medium density.
So I guess what I'm saying here is I'm reducing, we need the parking, however, I'll have to get back to you on that one. So I'm contradicting myself, am I?
You may not be, but I'd like to understand why you're not. So if you could think about that and come back to me, please. At 20 stop 10 of your evidence, you're talking about Lake Mackay Station. Effectively, because it's NZTA's issue, and they'll be required to provide comment on the access, as an upgrade may be required to accommodate the increase in trip, and this would be undertaken at the time of subdivision. If that's a good answer for accommodate at the time of subdivision for access onto the state highway, why isn't it a good answer for access onto council roads where if you've identified a problem, you said, well, sorting it out at the time of subdivision is not appropriate?
I guess I'm viewing that the state highway roads have sufficient capacity to accommodate this, but then we may also need consent from the NZTA.
And NZTA has quite clear guidelines as to when it will give and when it will refuse that consent, won't it?
Yes. So I guess they assess it case by case.
Well, the Chair is looking for his next question. Does this council have an infrastructure design guideline or equivalent that specifies things like separation distances from intersections for new road intersections and things like that in subdivision?
Yeah, we do have that.
In terms of your discussion of Lake Mackay Station, your answer in a number of places to the development plan is that access will have high costs and that's at 2012 and will incur substantial costs. My question is, well, isn't that the developer's problem?
Yeah.
And is that a reason to oppose the proposed development on a transport basis?
Yeah. No, if they're going to fund it, I don't see that as an issue. I was just highlighting that it's costly.
And to one of these developments, it's 2013, the one at 6 hectares, so that's 3 units, they're proposing a single lane with passing base. Do you regard that as acceptable as a transport link to, say, 3 dwellings?
For 3 lots, yeah.
So that was a yes?
Yeah.
Thank you. Can I take your rebuttal, please? Just a point of clarification. 4.1. Your last sentence. I'm in support of this. I was unclear as to what this was that you were supporting. Could you clarify, please?
I'm supporting that the subdivision stage that they will identify any necessary upgrades to the
well, that's fine. And in terms of the Red Eye et al. Position. So I think you've got, I think there are 9 lots down there currently. And you suggested the structure plan. Given that the 9 lots are currently in separate ownership, and there is one of those 9 landowners that's opposed to the redevelopment, so would presumably not contribute the exercise and wouldn't agree to the exercise, how would a structure plan actually work? How could it be put together? Who would put it together?
I'm not sure. I guess from my point of view, if I can see the structure plan, that would help with assessing the submission.
So yeah, so your position is however it was done, if it was done, it might be okay.
Can I flag on that topic? I was going to raise with Mr. Barr in due course, but I might as well flag it now for Ms. Scott as well. I'm aware in this district there's been a rash of private plan changes over recent years, and structure plans have been a large part of what private applicants have done to try and demonstrate why what they're doing might be appropriate. I'm interested to understand what, if any, extent structure plans are promoted in the strategic sections of the PDP that could support advice like we've just received. If at all, it may not be. But it might be hard for us to agree with things like structure plans as a method going forward to plan rezoning if the strategic section of the plan doesn't even say so. So for you both to think about, that was going to come your way.
Just on that note quickly, I understand the, council policy is that such structure plans do sit within the subdivision chapter. There are some exceptions, and they are some of the special zones, checkpoint.
What I mean is, for instance, the Auckland Unitary Plan now says any rezoning must have a structure plan, and there's a whole bunch of requirements that have to be met, whether it's public or private. And my question to you both is, does something similar exist to guide future applications for rezoning, so that the advice we're receiving from Ms. Banks and Mr. Glasner to an extent would actually have a pathway to be achieved? Or are we being given advice from Ms. Banks that actually runs into a planning / policy brick wall and can't go anywhere? So it's a follow-up question that I'm going to raise to you, which I'll just flag now because we're having the discussion.
Well, perhaps not necessarily a brick wall, just a black hole.
But a brick wall?
The Christchurch plan has policy in it, which basically directs the amount of detail that should be in any development plan, different names, similar concepts.
Because if it's not there, one recommendation this panel could make based on our consideration of rezoning requests could be we couldn't support some of these rezonings, but we totally agree with what Ms. Banks said, and therefore, as the stage two, the council should reopen all of its strategic chapters to introduce some actual strategic planning requirements, which is one conclusion to where the conversation could go.
Happy to take questions on that.
Well, that's just a flagging for you that I was going to ask it, but...
Thank you.
Two final questions, 2 minutes past five and 3 minutes past five. 4.6, you're talking about the lack of direction or lack of access to Sticky Forest. Question is for you, that I've been looking at the size of those trees up there and wondering from a traffic point of view how you would get them out of that location. Is that a feasible proposition given the existing road network in that vicinity? Assuming the landowner could get legal access to roads, for instance, through North Lake, have logging trucks will travel.
Okay. I guess they would have to provide traffic management, how they're going to access the roads, how they're going to, how to construct then their site. They will need to provide construction traffic management plan.
But in terms of residential roads through North Lake, for instance, are they going to be able to take logging trucks with large numbers of logs through them?
Well, I guess I have a pause because based on this submission going through residential streets, so I guess with the logging trucks issue, that highlights why, I guess another reason why submission shouldn't go ahead.
And presumably that position is only going to get worse as houses are progressively built on North Lake. The last point I had is 4.15. Your conclusion that you're not satisfied Mr. Edgar's evidence, and this is from Rachel Hawthenden, that the policy will be met in the light of the amount of traffic in this is about doesn't compromise road safety or efficiency. If you pose a lower standard as to whether it could be met, whether it was possible, or is that what you meant anyway?
I think I meant based on what I've assessed, I'm not what they're proposing will meet that policy.
Thank you. Any more before we close? People?
No.
Well, thank you very much. Your assistance is appreciated. This is everybody's patience, given that it's now 5:05. We'll adjourn for the day.
Mr. Chair, sorry, just one question. In terms of the timing of the information that you've asked from Ms. Banks, is that something that you after sooner, or is that something with a reply?
That should be able to be.
I think that as far as the submitters who are appearing go, they've had a chance to see Ms. Banks's position, and they're not going to be prejudiced, I don't think, from their ability to, in the meantime, appear and tell us why they think their submissions are the best thing for this life group. So I don't think there's a reason that we must have it before the submission. Obviously, sooner is always better, but if it comes in as a reply, it'll probably be okay.
Thank you. Any contribute?
Thank you for that clarification.
Well, in that case, we'll adjourn until 10 o'clock tomorrow.